Hi, and welcome to ITE1 Module 6, probably Part 1, because I don't think we're going to get through it all today. Today we're going to talk about laptops and portable devices. The first laptop was the GRID, GRID Compass 1101. It looks like it might be an acronym, but I'm not quite sure, which is why I wasn't quite sure how to say it, which was used on space missions in the 1980s. It weighed 11 pounds, which is slightly heavier than a Perkins Brailler, and cost $8,000 to $10,000. That's crazy. Now you can get a laptop that weighs 2 or 3 pounds that costs about $300 US. Portable devices.
I suppose it's flippant to point out that it wouldn't have actually weighed 11 pounds in space, though. It just would have had 11 pounds of mass.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that.
Sorry, I'm done now.
No, I like it. It's good. Yeah. Portable devices will only become more popular as prices continue to drop and the devices become more and more powerful. Boy, you can say that again, which I'm not going to. The terms laptop and notebook are interchangeable when referring to portable computers. The same is true for tablet as well. In this course, laptop is used exclusively, just to make things easier. Has everyone used a laptop before? Has everyone hasn't used a laptop before, I guess I should ask. I get the feeling everybody has. These are portable computers that fit in a backpack or a laptop bag. Today, they often come with external video ports, FireWire, and built-in webcams. All laptops can be used on a battery when AC power is not available. They used to be used by business people who needed to be productive away from the office. They were much too expensive and slow to be used day-to-day by regular consumers. Now, many people have laptops as their primary computers. Other uses include taking notes in school or researching papers, presenting information in business meetings, accessing data away from home or the office, playing games while traveling, watching movies while traveling, accessing the internet in a public place, sending and receiving email in a public place. Can anybody think of other uses not mentioned here? Any creative ways that you use your laptop?
I was just going to put in before we did that. Can anybody suggest a reason why a lot of people would be moving towards a laptop as their primary computer, just before we wonder about weird uses?
Because the laptop's reportable, but as powerful as most desktops. I remember when my old IBM Aptiva with the Windows 98 was around, and then I got my school gave me a Windows ME laptop, and all its specs were bigger than the 98. It had a bigger hard drive, it had, I believe, more RAM, it crashed twice as often. No, actually it didn't. But it was a better computer than the desktop I just bought a year ago.
Have ME on it long enough and it would.
I wouldn't say that the specs are comparable. I'd say the specs are almost as good. You can get a lot more grunt out of a desktop, as we've discovered. They are pretty damn good specs, though. A lot of people do it for portability. They don't want to take up the space with a desktop. They just want to put it on the corner of the dining room table. Or they live in an apartment where space is a problem. So that's another big reason why I see a lot of people moving towards laptops.
Well, if you get a big enough laptop, you can use it as your computer, your TV, your portable note taker.
Yeah, if you get a bowling ball.
Lots of people do that.
Yeah. Okay, so any interesting uses for laptops? I know live musicians are using them a lot now. Musicians performing live are using them now.
I actually had a discussion with a live musician about that, and I actually managed to talk this person into downgrading to a netbook with MIDI software on it, because that way if somebody upended a beer into it, it was only $400 down the drain rather than the $1,500 that he paid for his laptop.
That's a good idea.
I don't know what you mean about a bowling ball, but my roommate uses a laptop as a note taker. I'm like, well, don't, you know, I mentioned a Braille display, and I mentioned, don't you want a Braille note taker? He said, nah, I've carried my laptop with me. I'll just use that. I'm like, really? So you're on the bus, and you want to take down someone's number. You're going to whip it out and jot it down there. Okay.
I mean, the laptop that's sitting over here that's dead, that's you could probably kill someone with it. 17-inch full numeric keypad, heavy as anything you've ever seen.
Wow, that's an oldie.
No, it's actually fairly new. That's the sad part. Dell Precision Bowling Ball, I call it.
They can actually make number pads. My friend refuses to get a laptop without them. And so he actually had, I believe he had his custom made. I'm not sure where he got it from, but it was not very often, but he did get a number pad with his laptop.
Wow.
Actually, I've discovered that, watch out for this, because it was something I got bitten by the other day. The MSI Wind and some of the netbooks have a really odd FN key number pad layout that doesn't work at all well and doesn't give you access to all the number pad keys. So if you're going to get something without a number pad, make sure the FN key layout is going to behave like you expect it to. I'm going to have to use an external USB number pad on my MSI Wind when editing with Reaper. Hash file.
Yeah. All right. Let's go on. Personal digital assistants, or PDAs, are small computerized devices with a touchscreen, keyboard, or both. Nowadays, they are having touch, like I said, touchscreens, keyboards, or both. They didn't used to. They usually contain applications such as address book, calculator, alarm clock, internet access, email, and global positioning. Smartphones include the features that of a PDA plus the ability to make calls over the mobile network, built-in camera, document access, abbreviated note-taking, and the ability to watch television. It's really hard to draw the line between smartphones and PDAs. It just keeps getting finer and finer as people want one device to meet every possible need they could ever have in their pocket. I usually say that if it makes calls over a mobile cellular network, it's a smartphone. That's really the easiest way to do it, because anything that doesn't have a phone in it is going to be a PDA usually.
Actually, an interesting
PDAs,
point. I was going to say with the iPads, there are a lot of people who wanted to use the iPad without a computer. This is not possible because you need a computer to actually register the iPad and for backing up your music and stuff. But it's interesting how people tried to use the iPad without a computer.
Yeah, PDAs generally.
Yeah, I found that interesting too.
PDAs generally require a computer. That's a good point that probably should be put in here in the notes, and I might do it later. Generally, if you want to get all your information off and not keep your whole life on this PDA with no way to back it up, a computer or possibly a memory card is the best way to go. And of course, for many
some
of us
nice
in the
PDAs.
States, the Braille and Speak was the first PDA that we ever had.
Yeah, that was that's a good one. The Icon actually has network support, so you can throw things over the network to other computers, but yes, it does need a computer to work. But with a 30 gig hard drive,
yep.
You can fill it. It takes a while to fill.
Yep,
blind
I imagine it would.
Blind people's PDAs were actually more advanced than the sighted people's PDAs first, really.
Yeah, I think
yep,
the Braille Speak was the first PDA out, wasn't it?
No, I think there might have been
other
things,
other
but it certainly
before.
Did the most. As far as, I mean, yeah, there were other things. There was Talker Command, and there was a bunch of other stuff, but... Okay. PDAs use Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, infrared, and USB cables to connect to computers, the internet, and other devices. USB cables for portable devices are not standardized. For example, if you have two different phones, one of them could have a mini USB connector, and the other could have a micro USB connector. And they look similar, but are different. The micro USB has these little bumpies on it that sort of hold it in, and it's smaller. But make sure you have the right cable for your device before you just go jamming the cable into the socket there. Many devices use USB to charge as well as to transfer data. This is handy because as more and more devices are doing this, you can get a USB charger, and you can charge... a whole bunch of things. My friend charges her GPS and her phone from the same, not obviously not at the same time, but from her car cigarette lighter plug.
Problem. If you actually get some devices that you're trying to charge off a battery pack or you're trying to charge off a raw USB wall charger, because the data lines don't have pull-down resistors, they won't charge. We discovered this with our Nokia phones
iPods.
And some of the wall chargers and sometimes the iPods, yes. The iPods are particularly problematic for that. And iPads require lots of juice, so they require lots of juice and data lines.
Yeah, you'd certainly want to check with your device manufacturer and figure out whether it does actually need data to charge. You guys get to do the researching laptop smartphones and PDAs lab. This is going to be a fun one to grade because you get to hear what people's dream devices are. I can't wait to grade this one. I had a lot of fun doing this lab when I was a student. There are many different models and brands of laptops. Here are some features that are common to all laptops. They are small and portable. They have an integrated display screen in the lid. They have an integrated keyboard in the base. They run on AC power or a rechargeable battery. The actual chapter between the text and diagram descriptions reminds you about this particular fact at least probably 10 times. I am not going to remind you this 10 times. Just AC adapters or batteries are how laptops get power. So yeah, very important to remember. Laptops support hot swappable drives and peripherals. Most laptops can use docking stations and port replicators to connect peripherals, and we'll talk about those in a second. You have a lab about these as well, and I think that's one of the things we're going to do together, at least part of it. Laptops use the same external ports such as USB, FireWire, serial, parallel, VGA, and sound that desktops use. They also have express or PC card slots for extra memory or peripherals, and these are only on laptops. And I can't really describe these too well unless you've actually seen one. They generally slide into the side of a laptop and you can get network cards and modems and stuff are the most common ones that people might have seen. But now as laptops are getting more and more built into them, these aren't, I'm not seeing these in as common use as they once were.
And speech cards. My first laptop had one of those with a speech sound card thing in it.
Oh, oh like wow. Keynote or Accent
back
or something?
In the good old days of screen power and megadots.
Yeah, you probably had one of those deals. Now we'll look at components on the different areas of the laptop. And so we're going to talk about what they are. On the top of the particular, keep in mind all laptops that are going to be a little different. Here's the one that Cisco gives us. And HP sponsored this course, so it's probably an HP laptop we're looking at. The top view of the laptop, they have a Bluetooth LED, battery LED, and standby LED on this particular one. These are common LEDs you might find. These are on top of the laptop. The Bluetooth status LED indicates when the Bluetooth wireless transceiver is enabled. Excuse me. Bluetooth is a wireless industry standard that enables portable devices to communicate over short distances. This is something you'll see quite a few times in this course as we go through. The battery status LED indicates the condition of the computer battery. The type of battery and how the laptop is used affects how long a battery charge will last. Yeah, I think we know that, but anyway. The standby LED indicates the power of the laptop, so standby mode reduces the amount of electricity used by the laptop by shutting off the monitor, hard drive, and CPU. A small amount of electricity is used to keep the RAM active and to make the data available. So I guess this light would tell you whether you were in standby, hibernate, or whether the computer was actually shut all the way down, so you could look at a glance if you can. A laptop computer may enter standby mode when it has not been used for a predefined amount of time. A lot of them will also enter standby when the lid is closed. On most laptops, this is configurable. On MacBooks, you got to do some fiddling around. Thanks, Apple. If you're going to carry your laptop around and, you know, do Skype with it or something, you'll want to make sure that it doesn't do anything when you close the lid. Just be very careful.
Or the VoIC software.
Yes, that's true. You wouldn't want it to do that if you were going to use the voice. Yes, that's also very true. On the back of this laptop, we have the AC power connector and the battery bay. And those do exactly what you'd say, what you'd do. Also, we have the parallel port, which is a socket that is used to connect a device such as a printer or an older scanners. I think more for printers that are older, not so much for scanners. Let's see. The AC power connector is a connector that is used to attach the AC power adapter to the laptop and to charge the battery. The battery bay is a connector that is used to attach a laptop battery. In this laptop, it is probably for an extra battery, I think, because normally your battery would be at the bottom, but I think in some of them you can put in extra batteries for even more juice, and weight. Okay, on the left side of this laptop, we have a security keyhole. The security keyhole is a hard point in the laptop frame that is used to attach a security cable, lock kind of thing. Kensington makes a lot of these, but they're certainly not the only ones. Probably a good idea if you're worried about the security of your laptop, you can lock it down to things. And they do make them with keys. USB, the Universal Serial Bus or USB, is a socket that is used to connect one or more peripherals to the laptop. S-Video connector. The S-Video port is a 4-pin mini DIN connector that is used to output video signals to a compatible device. S-Video separates the brightness and color portions of a video signal. This port looks a lot like a mouse or a keyboard PS2 port, but it has fewer pins. They are easily confused, even by sighted people who aren't really good at recognizing the symbols near the connector. We even had one of our diagram describers get a little mixed up, but that's okay. We fixed it. Yeah, don't try and jam a keyboard connector into those guys. It doesn't work. I've tried it. I didn't break anything, but it really didn't work. Modem RJ11. The RJ11 modem port is a device that is used to connect the laptop to a standard telephone line. The modem can be used to connect the computer to the internet, to fax documents, answer incoming calls. Answering calls is not as popular or necessary as it used to be. It seems like their voice modems are going away. That was pretty popular in the 90s. And I had a computer that did this, and it was cool because you could actually it actually acted as an answering machine, as a speakerphone as well. So that was pretty neat. And it could receive faxes too. Next, we have the Ethernet RJ45. The Ethernet port is an RJ45 socket that is used to connect the laptop to a cabled local area network. Network LED, or actually, there's two of them. The two network LEDs are lights that indicate the status of the network connection. The green link light indicates network connectivity. The other LED light indicates the traffic to and from the laptop. Stereo headphone jack. The stereo headphone jack is a socket that's used to output audio signals to connected stereo headphones or speakers. Yep. Microphone jack. The microphone jack is a socket that is used to connect a microphone used for audio input. Ventilation. The ventilation grill is a series of vents that allows hot air to be expelled from the interior of the laptop. Don't block these are important. PC combo expansion slot.
Please note that most laptops have their intakes for ventilation on the bottom. Their outputs are on the sides, but their intakes are on the bottom, which is what
Yes.
makes a cooling pad very, very handy. If you want to fry an egg really well, leave your netbook on your bed and put the doing something intensive and put the egg on top of it. The egg will cook along with your netbook in
Or
bed.
on the bottom. Be careful if you're using a laptop on your lap. They can get really hot, and you can really not realize until you stand up and go, "Oh my God, it's hot!" I've
For the
done this
month
before.
that I used my netbook, I would leave it on its back, with a screen at about a 90-degree angle, so that I wouldn't, just to make sure that
That's not any
there was
better.
airflow. It's not much better.
I don't know
I
if
didn't
that's
have
any
much of a choice
better.
though. but I wasn't quite at the 90-degree, but it was pretty. I had to make sure that there was always airflow under the intake vents for the thing to make sure that the fabric wouldn't make it hot. And there's
just
actually
a
condition
guys.
Now.
Just get. You can get. We'll tell about the condition in a second, but just get a chopping board and put your laptop on a chopping board.
Yeah, yeah.
Problem solved.
That's true. I didn't think about that. There's actually a condition of people's legs turn out to be red because it's from prolonged exposure to hot material, because they leave the laptops on their legs and the pants get hot and their skin gets hot. So after a while, the doctors even notice red spots on your legs.
Yep. Just be careful with that. I had fun with that quite a few months ago. Alright, the PC combo expansion slot. The PC combination card slot is an expansion slot that supports the Express card expansion cards in the laptop slot at the top and PC cards in the bottom slot. I'm just going to fix something here. Alright. The laptop front on this one has the following things on it. The infrared port. The infrared port is a line of sight wireless transceiver that is used for data transmission. First time I ever saw one of these was on the back of my Braille note. I actually sort of got that working, by the way, with a laptop and ActiveSync. It was kind of a pain, but I kind of got that to go.
You know, I never got infrared working. I remember back in the day when you had to install talks on mobile phones using infrared.
Well, we'll talk more later about how to actually get that going.
Yeah, blind people can't line things up. That's your problem. You've got to line it up with the infrared. And blind people can't line things up. Well, some of us can, but it's hard.
It's such a small space.
Actually, the other thing to keep in mind is don't put it right up close to the infrared, because the further away the beam is, the wider it spreads. So put it about a foot away, and you'll have a much easier time lining it up.
Okay, speakers. Speakers are an output device that converts audio signals produced within the laptop to sound. Yeah, okay. The laptop latch. The laptop latch is a lever that is used to open the laptop lid. Some laptops are replacing this with a magnet. I've seen the Apple laptops do this and a couple others. Sometimes this latch can break. In the MacBook Pro from 2010 that my friend has, there certainly is. You just put it down just a little bit and it goes clunk.
Well, I didn't know it was a magnet or if it just had some type of...
I'm pretty sure there's a small magnet in there.
Yeah, my MSI Win's got magnets to hold the screen shut, and a lot of the Macs have magnets that hold the screen shut. Yes, rather than the clips.
Yeah, well, there's much better on that. They do break, yeah. Especially if you slam it. Somebody slams it, the edge will break right off.
This laptop also has ventilation on the front. There's a ventilation grill just as there is on the side, which does the same thing. On the right side of this laptop, we have the optical drive. The optical drive is a disk drive that is used to read and write to CDs and DVDs. The optical drive activity indicator. The optical drive activity indicator is an LED that illuminates when the drive is in use. So it's not the thinking light. Drive-based status indicator. This indicator is an LCD that is illuminated when a drive is installed in the laptop bay. these bays are actually pretty cool. I have a laptop that uses one of these, and you can just slide the optical drive straight out, and you can put another thing in, and it goes beep beep when you take it out. You can sometimes use batteries here or other drives. VGA port. The VGA port is a 15-pin socket that connects to external displays and projectors, and we'll talk about how to use it later. The bottom of this laptop has the docking station connector, and this connector is a socket that is used to attach a laptop to a docking station. Battery latches, and this machine has two of them, some have only one. The two battery latches are levers that are used when inserting, removing, or securing the laptop battery. So you, they can lock it in, or you can press them the other way and sort of take the battery out according to the directions and stuff. But yeah, there are latches that hold the battery in because you don't want it popping off. Is that this hard drive has a this laptop has a RAM access panel, and this is a cover that provides access to the expansion memory. That's a good thing. Some laptops, like the one I have, you have to take the keyboard out because it's under the like wrist resty area at the front. But this particular laptop, they were nice to you. They also provide you with a hard drive access panel, which is another cover that provides access to the internal hard drive bay. These are pretty cool. I've seen a couple laptops that have these that my dad's shown me. And we were talking about, I wrote about air intakes, as Aiden mentioned, so you don't want to block these, so don't set laptops on a surface such as a bed, like we were talking about, and you can get cool pads. We're going to compare the different types of laptop batteries. Does anyone have any questions, or shall we continue on then?
Not good.
I think this is pretty basic. All right, we're going to continue. We're going to compare the different types of batteries. There's a type of battery. This is a nickel metal cadmium battery, abbreviated in either NICAD or sometimes NICD. The characteristics of this battery: it is heavy for the power that it holds. It has a long life with many charging cycles, and it may exhibit memory effect. And those of you who've used some of the old tape recorders will know that that means the more these batteries are charged before they're run down, the more they like it and get used to it, and then suddenly you don't have as much battery life as you thought you should have. So it's good to run these guys down, I think.
They grow evil little whiskers in the cells, and then you've got to blast them with 12 volts. Not recommended for kids at home, but you can actually get rid of the nasty whiskers.
I've never heard of that, and I don't think I'll be trying it.
The other problem with nickel cadmium that you should be aware of is if you let them run completely flat, the cells can actually reverse polarize, and then they will refuse to charge. So when one cell reverse polarizes in your 6-cell battery, you then lose capacity and things get quite nasty. So that was the only other thing I was going to add about nickel cadmium.
I thought hydrides did that too, where they had polarity problems.
I'll have to check that with Mr. Battery. But I know that it certainly happens with the nickel cadmiums.
The battery actually died to the point where it would not actually work until I had someone open it up and take the battery out, and now it works on AC adapter. But I think it was doing that because if you let a battery die so flat like this and then charge it, you get crystals and nasty things and it shorts, and so they don't want that to happen in the Accent SA that I have.
Yeah, a lot of devices. My iAudio MP3 player, which I still love, has that problem. If I let it run completely I have to charge it for 24 hours before it will even turn on. And then the battery will take a charge. It's a very weird thing.
Yeah, the DeckTalks did weird things too with the NiCads.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, common uses of these are toys, cordless phones, emergency lighting, power tools, and camera flashes. The disposal for these is you check local rules, do not incinerate or put in landfills. Cadmium is toxic. Can I just say that incinerating any battery is just not a great idea? I'm not sure. I've never been let's put a battery in fire.
Isn't that how they dispose of them in the third world? Because, I mean, there are recycling plants in places like India and China where they dispose of a lot of technology. And I heard that they incinerate it, and it's really hazardous to be around. But I don't know.
No idea.
Sure.
Yeah, that would be pretty hazardous.
That wouldn't be a job I'd want to go to every day.
Okay. No. Okay. The next type of battery is the nickel metal hydride, also written NIMH. Not the secret of nickel metal hydride battery, although my friend was joking about that. The characteristics are moderate weight for power and lifespan. May experience polarity reversal at end of cycle. Shut down or recharge at once, it says here. I'm not quite sure who wrote this. It may need several charge or discharge and discharge cycles to reach full capacity. So that's something to be aware of. Common uses are cell phones, digital cameras, GPD units, flashlights, and other consumer electronics. The disposal method is check local rules, less toxic than NiCad, but you still want to see how you're exactly supposed to do it. Type of battery, lithium ion, LI-ION is how these are abbreviated. Characteristics, lightweight for the power, no memory effect, can easily overheat, so be careful, keep cool, charge often, and it says that you should get the newest batteries that you can, so most recently manufactured for your devices. These can catch fire or do some very fun explodey things. Well, actually a lot of batteries can, but these can be particularly fun. You can look up exploding laptop battery videos on YouTube, and they're very well narrated, and they're a little bit scary.
We posted one to discuss. It's in the
yes,
archives.
We did.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I'd seen that one before.
My son watched that, and he was quite impressed.
Oh wow!
Did he explain it for you?
Make sure not to actually try it at home. Oh. Okay, common uses of these are cell phones and laptops. My note taker actually has one too. Disposal rules, check local rules, and the contents are flammable, as we were just discussing. The final type of battery, lithium polymer, and this is Li-poly or LiPo, are two alternate ways to write these. Characteristics, mostly... costly, small, and lightweight for power, moderate capacity, fast recharge, moderate lifespan, do not short circuit, is not flammable. I've only ever seen one of these in the... I have the Plextalk PTR1, and this is the only one I've seen, and actually maybe... I don't know if it's because of that battery or the fact that it's built in Japan or both, but man, those safety instructions are interesting. Some of the things in there, I really don't know why they thought they needed to tell you. But anyway, the common uses of these are PDAs, laptop computers, portable MP3 players, portable gaming devices, and radio-controlled airplanes. Disposal, check local rules. So you just want to, any of these rechargeable batteries, make sure that you're throwing them away, disposing of them appropriately, I guess I should say. I'm not exactly sure, and this brings up an interesting point. Where would you actually go to find your local... I don't know where I would go to find my local rules
council.
For throwing these things away, I'm sure. It's not that
yeah,
easy
local
in
council.
America.
Local council, if you've got a local council.
Maybe.
Google.
Public Works.
Computer recycling places would probably be able to tell you.
Yeah, any computer store probably would.
Oh, we just throw them in the trash. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could ask
some of them
computer
have said
shop
that.
Too.
All right, now we're going to take a look at the components of the laptop that are visible when the lid is open. Exciting. Let's see. Just finding little typos as I'm going through. Laptops can use many different input devices, including keyboards and mice. They use a lot of the same ones that desktops do. They can also use styluses and pens. I would think more for PDAs, but you can get some interesting tablet and pen things. They also have touch pads that and can have touch strips, which are the bane of blind people's existence worldwide, because you can end up changing things like volume and network cards, on-off states, and all kinds of things. And you also have to be careful with touchpads that you don't brush them as you're typing and find yourself in a window you had no idea you were in. Turning the sensitivity down helps and drives sighted people crazy. One careless swipe on a touch strip, as I said, and you can change volume, mute, turn wireless radios on and off. And do all kinds of stuff.
I used to have a Toshiba that you could turn the touchpad off and on, and the one I got after that was a Compaq, and you couldn't do that, and so you would have to actually go in and disable the mouse, or I would, especially for me, because I was forever doing that. Although I find that the Mac touchpad on my MacBook, I don't seem to hit while I'm typing, and it's obviously usable with the trackpad, the glass one, so I don't know whether it's just me or I've changed or it's different or something, but I always have to turn the mouse off on that Compaq.
Some of the laptops I've actually seen have an icon in the system tray that allows you to, with a simple menu click, turn the touchpad off. Now, I'm pretty sure that the touchpad would come back on again when you reboot if you did that, but you'd have to check with your actual...
Depends. The Synaptics have an off, stay off setting. If you've got Synaptics, you can actually go turn this off and it stays off. Whereas with the MSI Win, you've got to press FNF3 to turn the touchpad on and off each time you boot. So it just depends on what you've got.
The Synaptic I have does is it has an option that if it notices you're typing and you brush it, it will say, you know, he probably doesn't want to move the mouse, so we'll just ignore this. They call it, I forget what they call it, type and touch, or they have a funny name for it, but...
Now that's good.
I think the Mac may do some of that as well automatically, because I think you probably are hitting the touchpad, you probably just aren't doing it in such a way that it thinks you mean it.
If I have Trackpad Commander on, it does it a lot more. If I turn it off, it...
Well,
it
yeah.
So yeah, it does seem to be pretty useful, but I'll tell you, with Trackpad Commander on, it sure makes you understand why sighted people like mice so well.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, the laptop keyboard. The keyboard is a compact input device and has multifunctional keys. Laptops have an additional key known as the function key, abbreviated as the FN key. I like to call it the fun key because depending on what you press with it, you don't, unless you know the laptop well, you get into all kinds of fun and have no idea what you're doing. This key allows other keys to perform a different function than usual when the function key is held down. The feature that is accessed by pressing and holding the FN key is printed on the key in a smaller font or a different color, or it may have a simple a cryptic icon that you may need to get help explaining, and even that might not help too much. There are several functions that can be accessed this way: volume settings on some laptops, display brightness, sleep states, wireless functionality, to check the battery status. The FN key must not be confused with function keys F1 through F12. These keys are typically located in a horizontal row across the top of the keyboard, and their function depends on the operating system and applications that you're in when they're pressed. And a lot of times the F keys are what are modified by the FN key to do things, but not all the time. I saw one computer where you change the volume, you hit FN page up and page down. That was not easy to do in a hurry. Let's see. Each of the function keys, of course.
Page up and page down keys are on the arrow keys now, and you use the function.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
One of the other things to know is, of course, that each of the F keys can be made to perform up to 7 separate operations by using Control, Alt, Shift, modifier keys like that. Going back to the use of the FN key, you're going to want to get a sighted person or the laptop manual so you can find out which keys do what with the FN key held down, and write them down somewhere. That way you don't forget them and you can tell other people what they do as well.
In fact, we had a situation the other day, I'm not going to dob anybody in particular, where they had done something with their function keys, and because they didn't have a map of them written down anywhere, they weren't getting their audio back anytime soon.
Real quickly, we'll do the input devices. The input devices are the touchpad, which consists of a right and left click buttons, and a pointing controller. The touchpad and pointing controller can be used instead of a mouse for the laptop. I think by pointer controller, they mean the, on some laptops it's called an eraser head. On other laptops, I had one that, my friend called it a cat's tongue because it was this little nubby thing that was real kind of rough and weird feeling, and it was, and it was between like the G, H, and B keys. I think it was close to the bottom middle of the keyboard, and there were buttons at the top of the touchpad you could use if you were only going to use it. And actually, that was kind of an interesting thing to play with NVDA. Let's see, we're just about out, right?
Yeah, we're at 58.
Just about out. Okay. Let's see if I can get through the fingerprint reader here. Fingerprint reader is the... it looks at your fingerprints, and it's an input device used for security and authentication. Alright, I've got 11 right now. We're going to talk about the volume control, which I'm sure we all don't know what the volume control is, so you'll be happy to find out what that is next week. No, I'm just kidding. Are there any questions?
Stay tuned.
Ooh. Yeah.
Actually, to be honest, you can joke all you like about volume control, but if I had a dollar for every student that didn't know their Windows mixer, I'd be richer than Gates.
Oh, yeah, that's actually quite true.
That's true, but I think everybody at least knows what a volume control is meant to do, even if they don't know how to use it. But yeah, you're
right.
That's about all. That's about as far as the
that's all this explains.
It just explains that a volume control turns it up and down.
Yeah, actually, yeah, because it literally here says volume control. The volume controls are buttons that control audio output. That's all we get. Oh, and we get the power button,
in case you didn't know.
What about all those other boxes, man?
We're just not the hardware buttons. About the one in
we're not actually talking about the Windows mixer. We're just talking about the volume control.
But, we're just talking about the buttons.